as Katsu evolved in this past year, I kind of evolved into how I used Katsu. And this is the way I was using it. If I was, and I'm going to push the computer back a little, but if I had learned to do a pattern of movement that was only in this direction, and I had to change that completely and change it to more of a cutting direction. Now, this is completely new. And as my brain began to learn how this new cutting direction was managed, the iterations of paths that it might follow would be very wide, which means there'd be a lot of noise associated with the pattern, which would create a lot of loss of energy and power. So the drive on my end was to create an environment where I could accelerate the brain's process of learning the acquisition of the pattern and hone it down to where it was exactly the same pattern every time.
Statements made in this podcast have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. For more information about Katsu and Katsu products, visit katsuglobal.com. That's katsuglobal.com.
We have a really cool guest with us today for kind of a Katsu interview with his experience with Katsu and how he's used it in his sport. Coach Jonte Skinner is joining us today. Former world record holder, NCAA champion, International Hall of Famer, was a coach at Alabama for a long time. Jonte has worked with a lot of emerging technology in the sport of swimming. And I think that's really why Stephen and Jonte's relationship with respect to Katsu has really blossomed over the years. That is our guest today. Jonte, it's awesome to have you on board today. Thank you for joining us.
Well, you're welcome. And, you know, I've known Steve for eons, for a long time. So, you know, I was always something, you know, you're right about me. I've always been someone that has been very interested in anything that is new or different or could change how we see the sport or how we develop the sport or develop athletes. And I'm always looking for that next paradigm that I think is going to make a difference in the long run. And, you know, from my initial introduction to it with John and Steve in Florida that very first time, and some of the initial uses that I used it for in Alabama, it really evolved to some degree to how I used it in Indiana. So, I spent a year at Indiana kind of with the new devices, the really more portable little boxes that I thought were really convenient. My transition went from more of a training kind of tool to more of a skill adaptation tool. So today I'm going to talk more about how I use it in skill adaptation. And to preface that is to understand how the brain manages movement, how the brain really, I try to teach athletes that even though they're athletes and they think of the heart and lungs as the most important organs that we use in performance, the reality is it's actually the most important organ is the brain. Because the more exposure, the more opportunity we give the brain exposure to the patterns of movement that they want to use or will utilize in racing and how to manage that pattern of movement, the more skilled it is at reproducing what you want when you're at the point where you want it the most, which is in racing. In my line of work as a college coach, I found that pretty much 90% of the athletes that came into my environment needed to learn new skills. And in some cases, I had to reteach them how to swim freestyle. Like they just didn't understand it. Their technique was, to use a euphemism, abysmal. Mm-hmm. And, it was just start from scratch. And the way the brain works is the brain wants to be on autopilot. We think of the left and right hemispheres as controlling left and right side actions of the body. But the reality is the left hemisphere controls everything that we know. Basically, it's the automation center of all the skill that we know. The right hemisphere is all about exploration. It's metaphor, it's music, it's a whole different environment. When you learn something new, a completely new pattern, you have to trick the brain into getting into the right hemisphere, which is a challenge in itself because it doesn't want to do that. It just wants to do what it knows. And once you trick it to get in there to learn new patterns, now you're in the process of teaching the brain how to manage a completely new pattern at the adult stage, which requires probably a time frame of anywhere from 6 months if you're extremely lucky to probably out to almost 2 years before that skill acquisition can be honed into where it becomes automated and becomes very good, and you can build strength, power, and performance in that new pattern. So it takes a long time. I've done this many, many times with athletes, and I have a very strong repertoire of tricks and tools in my toolbox that I use to trick the brain to learn something new. As Katsu evolved in this past year, I kind of evolved into how I used Katsu. And this is the way I was using it. If I was, and I'm going to push the computer back a little, but if I had learned to do a pattern of movement that was only in this direction, and I had to change that completely and change it to more of a cutting direction, now this is completely new. And as my brain began to learn how this new cutting direction was managed, the iterations of paths that it might follow would be very wide, which means there'd be a lot of noise associated with the pattern, which would create a lot of loss of energy and power. So the drive on my end was to create an environment where I could accelerate the brain's process of learning the acquisition of the pattern and hone it down to where it was exactly the same pattern every time. Because once you get there and the brain can manage the movement, it reduces the number of motor units associated with managing the movement, cost goes down, and then eventually build strength and power on top of that. I have found that in order to accelerate the process of skill acquisition, I use a concept called contrast training. So in contrast training, what I do is I put the athletes into the environment where I provide resistance, and I slow the pattern down to where it's meticulous, to where they are very meticulous about following a specific pattern of movement with resistance, because the brain is very, very much better at learning with resistance back there. And then I might put little tricks or tools in there to add to make the brain think, okay, this is clearly something new. I have to really focus on what I'm doing so that I can master this new pattern, because I want to get this down because I don't want to have to deal with it anymore. So by adding resistance to the movement, what I did was I would marry the contrast between perfect, resistant, meticulous patterns, and then I flip right from that to high-intensity swimming. So race-intensity swimming. So the same pattern, but extremely fast. And I asked the swimmers not to kind of focus specifically on what that pattern was, because I didn't want them to do it. I didn't want them to be encumbered by it. I just wanted to have a sense of, okay, this is what I want to do, and then let them go. And what I found that is by contrast training, that the process of learning the new pattern or adapting or acquiring the new skill was enhanced. It was accelerated. So then I came and said, wait a second, if I add the Katsu to the slow, meticulous pattern and did the Katsu in that phase and then took Katsu off and put them into that high-intensity fast swimming, what it did was it really helped the swimmer coming off the Katsu. Not only did they feel good, which in my mind had a cognitive mind-based component, this feels really good, but it also, in my opinion, just added to that process of acceleration, because the worst thing that happens when you make a change with an athlete and you try to put them into an environment where you're learning a skill acquisition that is new, it is similar to what you wanted it to be, but it's new enough to where it creates a difference in opportunity and potential, but it's close enough to where the brain says, no, I really want this. This doesn't interest me at all. So if you employ and you get environments where the actual cognitive thinking mind actually says, oh, actually, I think this feels good. I like it. it makes the brain a little more aware of like, okay, maybe it's something we should keep. We should learn how to understand this and keep it. So by adding the katsu to that element of contrast training during the methodical resistance phase, I feel like I was enhancing the process of learning. You know, and folks, I use it for recovery. I use it for athletes to get ready to race. I've used it in a lot of different areas that are normal ways that we use katsu. But this was the most recent way I was employing it in terms of skill acquisition and the rationale behind why I used it that way for skill acquisition.
I have a question. So you've already obviously been focused on swimmers, which just swimming is a very technical movement. You're also golfing now, a sport that isn't your chosen line of work. Could you use it for everything from golfing to, let's say, physical rehabilitation if you've got total knee replacement or what have you?
Absolutely. I think to me, it's a combination of that, the physical, right? How the brain kind of deals with the circumstance that you're dealing with, right? So this is the physical brain dealing with any circumstance. And then this relationship of that cognitive thinking mind, that the psychology of the situation that adds to the element of, if someone feels good, it becomes important. And if it's important, the brain is going to take notice of it. So to me, like as a golfer, and for those of you who don't know me, I'm 6'5". So golfing, you know, it's more for like people around 6 feet, somewhere in that range, because it's a little more compact, movement's easier to manage. I played golf with a very good baseball player the other day. And I said, okay, give me the news. What's worse, trying to deal with 100-mile-an-hour fastball or hitting a golf ball? And he just shook his head. He said, this is no contest. It's hitting a golf ball. He said, and the worst thing about it is the golf ball's just sitting there. So, you know, as trying to learn this game of golf and becoming better at it, I know and understand that I have to develop a process of a pattern of takeaway and movement, which is all over the place, especially when you're 6'5". Those iterations are huge, you know, and I'm just learning how takeaway and patterns are involved in steering the ball in the right direction kind of thing. But to me, if I kind of work my swing plane without even a golf ball, I don't even need a golf ball there. I just need to be working with the patterns, with right resistance on katsu, and then take everything off and come back to swinging at the speeds that I need to swing at. Because when I swing slow patterns, I can really manipulate and control the pattern versus not with the pattern. So I feel like, you know, it has both this physiological, neurological, and then on the same end, if you kind of understand how it works with athletes, this whole psychological, cognitive thinking, feel-good process that, you know, to give you an example, the very first time I asked the swimmer to put katsu bands on I said, you can wear them for 10 minutes in the warm-up. At the time, we were working with a katsu's pressure of about 2/3 of her normal working pressure. And I said, just put them on your legs, you know, watch the clock, do your normal warm-up, take them off after 10 minutes. She did. She put them on the side of the deck. She came out after warm-up. She goes, oh, my God, I feel awesome. I just feel freaking awesome. Now, was that katsu or was that the cognitive thinking mind saying, we're going to kick ass today, you know? You know, to me, you cannot have one without the other. You cannot be exclusive in the physical, neural side and not, you know, encounter what this cognitive thinking, psychological side is adding to the equation.
What are these sets that you're doing from the, you know, reducing the noise of that we encounter to a high intensity? Are you talking like 400 meters something in a 4100s, or what are you talking about?
No. In a non-katsu environment, so if they don't have katsu on, and I could work on the entire spectrum of swimming. So, you know, swimming at slow speeds all the way up to swimming at race speeds, there's this curve, there's this continuum, and you have to be sort of on the path of that continuum. So I would do something like 4 to 6 25s with resistance, maybe with small paddles on, methodical, perfect patterns of movement with total focus. A lot of times if they're freestyles, there's a snorkel on, so they don't have to worry about dealing with breathing or anything else. And then they just focus on the perfect patterns. And then I flip that and that would do maybe 4 75s if I'm working with a VO2 max level with the appropriate amount of rest, and then come back and do it again. Just do it again. Just flip flop between the two. And that's working with a VO2 max environment. If I wanted to do a pure speed environment or race rate type environment, then I would do the resistance, and then they would be swimming 25s at race rate. And I would keep the load, the contrast levels, probably the resistance levels somewhere between 100 and 150 yards, always in 25s. And then the performance side, depending on the energy system I'm trying to hit, I might be out as far as 875s if I'm looking at the endurance kind of cardiovascular component, all the way down to 4 to 6 25s if I'm looking at the speed component. So it would depend on what component I'm working on. But that's where I would do it in a non-katsu. When I included the katsu to it, I only work with the speed side. I didn't do the endurance side. I never had time enough to play with the speed side, because the idea didn't really click into my mind until late October, late November, early December, when I was actually changing gears and starting to get my athletes really into that race rate, you know, getting the brain exposure to just being able to manage race rate with new patterns, new power, new strength, new, you know, things, and just honing that side in prior to performance at the Big Tens, and then nothing happened beyond that. So it's an area that I think is really worth exploration, more than I've even explored it. But I've spent a lot of time really studying neuroscience, and mostly on it, don't get confused, I'm not a neuroscientist. I'm a person that has read a lot about neuroscience. I feel like it is truly the next paradigm in performance, because when you truly understand how the brain manages and organizes and deals with patterns of movement, then you change gears on how you train people. Because you now understand, okay, I'm not training the heart and the lungs, they're sort of byproduct. I'm now training the brain, and I'm training the brain how to manage all these other things. And then you create the environments where you expose the brain to all the elements that it needs to be exposed to in order to put itself in a position where the expectation and the anticipation on race day is meets your goal performance. And really, because I'm one of these people that are always evolving and thinking. And when I learn something new, like I'm just reading, I'm just in the process of reading a book called Physical Intelligence, which I find really intriguing and interesting, you know, and then all these thoughts and these notes that I write down as the big book evolves. And then I go back and look at stuff from before. So, you know, it took me a while to kind of come back and say, okay, contrast training came out of a book called Motor Cortex. And that concept was really more about the sport of baseball. It had nothing really to do with swimming. But in reading it, it made a lot of, you know, a lot of, and increased my understanding of, because I'm always in this process of helping kids learn to manage better movement, skill acquisition type thing. It made absolute sense to me. So in putting katsu, marrying katsu into that process made a lot of sense and didn't come till late. That's why, you know, I never went more than 4 to 6 25s to do the pattern rehearsal, and then I never really went, you know, more than, you know, with the katsu, more than 4 to 6 25s, just working at velocity. And this would be the sort of sequence that I would go. I would do a katsu sequence of 4 25s where they have the resistance, and then I'd flip them out of that, and I'd put 1 pound weights on their wrists, and I would make them swim 4 25s at weight velocity with 1 pound weights on their wrists. Because I feel like it is just getting the brain to deal with different dynamics.
Right.
Then I'd chill, come back and add some katsu with the same format, and then go back to weights with fins and paddles. So then just keeping them just different things at that velocity, getting very comfortable with it. and then come back and do it with nothing on, to where I maybe go the first two 25s with the equipment on, and then the last two 25s with nothing on, to slowly take the brain out of dealing with these other elements while performing at this high intensity at race velocity, and then taking them down to race velocity. I think when they got to those last two 25s, you know, they just felt good. They just, if you take the weights off and then you start swimming, you feel good. So I was marrying the feel good that you get from katsu to the feel good that you get after using weights to this whole cognitive belief system that just says, this is awesome.
And you've potentially turned on a whole, fired up a whole section of the brain.
You do, because honestly, you know, one of the things that I don't think coaches truly understand is the importance of exposing the brain, constantly exposing the brain to different dynamics, different things, you know, just something to just get it out of its comfort zone to start opening up and saying, wow, okay, I need to change gears.
I'm fascinated by this, because when we have guys that have massive TBI, let's say, and they can't move their hand, or they have it like clenched up in the fist, then they put the katsu bands on into cycle mode and the therapists help them. And sometimes it only takes 5 or 10 minutes and then they're moving. Now, I'm not talking a spinal cord injury. I'm talking a brain injury. So that autonomic nervous system response like that. And that's what you're doing, that you're working in that space with competitive athletes, which is
awesome. Yeah, it's somewhat similar.
Awesome. Yeah.
I imagine it would. There'd be no question that you'd have your kids into that, those environments. You know, if they had them on swim benches or pulley systems or tubing with cut, you know, that would maintain the functional power that they had when they were in the pool on a constant basis.
8 of my kids were very dedicated to using katsu during the time, doing simple things like adding katsu bands to their dry land practice, doing, and Steven saw it, I had kids in endless pools using katsu bands, in the open water using katsu bands, because our time was a lot less. And what I have written down in a very, very scientific way in a notebook and pencil is we are now in the pool and my kids are not as fit as they were before. They're more fit. I believe that they're faster than they ever were. Now, I think that there's an element that they actually have recovered a little bit from just being broken from me and kind of the old school side of swimming. But I have kids who, after 4 months of not touching water, a best time of a 146, 200 yard freestyle going 149 in practice. So they're, I'm blown away at how fit they are right now. I don't know if Steve, if that answers it, but yeah. Just, we've been using katsu more than before. And it's incredible, because aerobically, I feel like they haven't lost very much.
The more, especially in this past year, the more I felt about where the value of katsu came in when you're actually in the pool was this whole, where I've evolved and advanced to where it is managing and understanding and building power and strength in patterns of movement. So I don't think it matters what distance you swim. I think it matters when you train with katsu, what distances you swim. And I don't think it's necessary for, I mean, I might hypothetically say I would katsu a swimmer, and then maybe the distance swimmers would swim, you know, maybe 650s or 850s. To me, it's just about exposing the brain to what it's managing and how it's going to manage it, and then marrying the two together in that contrast style. So, you know, doesn't matter the distance, doesn't matter the athlete physiology. I think the process would be fairly similar up and down the chain.
The Katsu Cycle 2.0 is launched. After years of research, design modifications, software changes, user feedback, and utilization of metabolite testing results, the next generation Katsu Cycle 2.0 is now available. It is more compact and quieter. It is more capable and more powerful than the first generation Katsu Nano and Katsu Master products. The Katsu Cycle 2.0 enables exercise, recovery, and rehabilitation anywhere, anytime, by anyone. The ultra-compact, ultra-light,
durable unit offers the Katsu Cycle and Katsu Master training modes and utilizes precise software-controlled limb pressure for both your arms and legs. The Katsu Cycle 2.0 includes four Katsu air bands for both arms and legs, a rechargeable battery, with a USB-C charger. The pneumatic elastic bands can be disconnected from the Katsu Cycle 2.0 unit and are waterproof for use in the pool. Based on the original Katsu know-how and U.S. patent number 9775619, compression and decompression control system and vascular strengthening method, the Katsu Cycle 2.0 can do the following. It can tone muscle without weights. It's convenient. It can be done anywhere, anytime, by anyone. It offers access to the Katsu Performance Database. It offers 6 preset Katsu cycle levels. It can efficiently and effectively improve speed, stamina, and strength. The Katsu Cycle 2.0 is an incredible time saver. It can improve circulation. It enables faster recovery. It enables greater range of motion for those rehabilitating and recovering from injuries and surgeries. It is reimbursable with various CPT codes. And the Katsu Cycle 2.0 offers customizable Katsu pressures.
Katsu, profoundly simple and simply profound.
Statements made in this podcast have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. For more information about Katsu and Katsu products, visit katsuglobal.com. That's katsuglobal.com.
So I love the concept of this whole mental part of the training and the idea of neuroplasticity. I highly recommend, that's what I was trying to do while you guys were talking about it. There's a book called The Brain That Changes Itself. I don't know if any of you have ever read that.
Fabulous. Audiobook.
Yeah. So, well, again, I've done it both ways, but there's also a video on I think it's Amazon Prime about it, but you know, the concept, especially to us in westernized medicine, is so foreign. I mean, it's kind of taken off recently. But, you know, my father had a major stroke, and I wish I would have known some of these concepts of, you know, him concentrating on the paralyzed side rather than, you know. So I like the concept. I have not honestly used those. And you're being, like I say, I'm a triathlete because I'm trying to be an athlete. I pretty much suck at everything. But I really like the concepts of it getting older, and as you know, get into your late 50s, it becomes more of a challenge to stay active. And I really like the idea and concept of Katsu allowing me to do that and to hopefully even improve. I mean, I may not necessarily get a whole lot faster, but at least maintain. And these are new concepts for me. I'm a big visualization person. Again, I'm terrible at golf too, so I may have to try my Katsu with my golf swing. But I love these concepts and ideas from elite people like yourselves.
Yeah, John T. Just so you know, when I first met Dr. Sato, he separated Katsu into three basic areas. One was the Katsu cycle, so for the warm up, rehabilitation, warm down. Katsu training, which is, you know, just constant pressure. But he also had a third area. And it was more difficult for me to get the information out of him because it was applied by the elite baseball, swimming, wrestling, et cetera, coaches in Japan. And he called it performance training. And performance training for him with Katsu was almost exactly what you described, you know, purposeful movement or mind. He called it something like mindful movement with Katsu.
Yep.
And then they didn't go backwards and forwards, backwards and forwards. What they did was mindful movement and then race pace or, you know, whatever that movement was. They just did it once and twice. And I really like you know, you're going back and forth and back and forth to eliminate that noise and make that perfect movement. I think that's brilliant.
This accelerates the, it's the learning process. Yeah. And it's hard. It's not easy. I mean, I've done this years as a coach. You know, when I work for USA Swimming, and I would show up at someone's pool, some university, and film athletes, and I'd sit down with the coach and the athlete, and I'd take them through all the things that were glaring errors. I mean, I'm called glaring errors. And they'd both sit there and go, wow, I had no idea that was going on. Yes, we got to change that. I'd give them some basic drills to help them change. And then I'd come back a month later. I'd see them in a competition a month later, and guess what?
Same thing.
Nothing had changed, right? So, you know, it wasn't a motor. It wasn't necessarily like as coaches we think of a motor thing, you know. It had to be here, you know. So that's what led me to the very first book I read was Norman Doidge's The Brain That Changes Itself. Okay. It was the very first book I read.
Awesome.
And then from there, you know, that expanded to books and books and books on the brain and how it manages movement and that thinking. And then I'm one of those lucky people that I've had this pool of guinea pigs in front of me that I just kind of threw stuff at them. And I'll leave you with one funny anecdote, but I always, you know, coaches have this, swimming coaches have this problem as they relate the way a shape moves through water. They always talk about the hand, and it's, you know, we're wired for hands and feet. We're absolutely wired for hands and feet in terms of neurology. But they always talk about the hand moving past the body. When we talk about patterns of movement, we always relate it that way. A coach might stand on deck and go, put your hand in the water this way, get a high elbow position, you know, and then the hand will move past the body as the coach traces the pattern. Well, the problem with that is the brain sort of wants to do it the same way. Instead, the coach should put the hand in the water and basically walk his body past the hand, following those same patterns of changes in movement. That's the mistake. So, you know, the idea is that I wanted the kids to become more aware of their shape. I wanted them to become more aware of the flow of water around their shape. I wanted them to be sensitized to it. So I had this, I think it was a 10-year-old boy at the time, and I cut a whole bunch of these nylon strings. I mean, a whole bunch of them, you know. And I taped them onto his shoulders so they were flowing down his body and his legs on both sides. And I put a pair of fins on him, and I just wanted him to go down the pool, up and down the pool, and then come back to me and say, do you feel what's going on with these bands? I wanted the brain to become sensitized to these strands of string as they float around his body. At the same time, I was watching and filming on deck, watching how they changed based on the vortices as they came off his body. Well, to cut a long story short, what I used initially, very first day one, I used duct tape to put him on his shoulders. Well, that left this huge red welt on his shoulders. So I'm like, when he puts his shirt on at the end of practice, I say, son, do not take your shirt off at home and don't tell your mom about your shoulders. You know, and the other time, when I took that to British swimming and I had a really elite level breaststroke, I mean, he was on the British Olympic team, and I had taped this on his pecs, and I had Kytec tape at that time. So I had a non-invasive tape on him. So I put this Kytec tape with all these strands coming down because he's a breaststroker and I wanted him to kind of feel flow. Well, I got him all taped up with the Kytec tape on his chest. It happened to be pink at the time, unfortunately. All these tassels hanging down, and all I got were hoots, cat whistles, and whistles from the kids in the audience. He looked like some kind of belly dancer. I mean, I still feel like it's a crucial concept for when swimmers start to realize that understanding that how their shape moves through water and the feel of how that, the flow of water over that shape, and if we can sensitize people to kind of sense that, then I think they change the paradigm of how they manipulate their anchoring positions as they vault the shape through the water.
Do you ever use a higher pressure or lower pressure to achieve what you want to achieve? How does pressure play a part of this?
The pressure played a part in that I, you know, when I chose the pressure for contrast, Katsu, I went with the same concept that when I had kids warm up with a katsu band on their legs, at the time in talking with Chris and yourself, the rule of thumb was go to 2/3 of their training pressure. So that's what I did. If they were training with 240, they went to like 180 or somewhere in that range. And, you know, if they felt like that still wasn't the right comfort, I let them go lower, because ultimately I want them to kind of have this great feeling. It had more of a cognitive thinking, psychological plus, even though we know that it has physiological, you know, what it does physiologically to the flow. So I went with that same premise and went down that same path with this. And I felt like that was the right place to be for this specific type of thing. Because I feel like if you get to that point where the pressure's at a 7 or an 8, you know, in terms of the Borg scale, sometimes there was too much discomfort to really get to that good zone right away.
If we think of, you know, and we've had some examples, Jonty, in these last weeks of a fellow colleague of Steve and myself, a swim coach working with people who are, was the gentleman had a stroke, Steve, I believe, yeah. And yes, was able yeah. to move for the first time in 10 years. So I'm thinking as we get older, and you know, thinking of my own parents, as my mom says, she loves to walk, and she just feels like she wants to walk that far, but she can't. So I'm thinking if I just start to have her walk with the katsu bands on, you know, is it the same thing where she's going to train her brain, and it's the race pain that I talk about, her walk brain, to be able to, when she gets tired, to be able to actually go further because her brain knows it can go further. I don't know if that made sense.
I put the katsu on her before she did the walk.
Yeah.
I'd prep her for the walk. I wouldn't walk with them on. Yes, I'm putting together, I don't know if it'll be a book, you know, because I'm just thinking about how to disseminate information into the media environments and the people today. It might really ultimately just be a website, brain training for swimmers, that then you can go in and pick and choose what you want to kind of look at. If I want to understand how to freestyle or this or brain training or contrast training, then you go and get what you want. You know, you go, you might say get the book, or you might get parts of the book, or you might just get one section type of thing. I mean, I think the predisposition for people, younger people today, is have a hard time sitting down reading through a book, you know. So the idea is if they can get something that they can sit down and absorb, yep. and gather in 10 to 20 minutes of reading, I think that the value in that is much higher, and they have something right there and then they can take and act upon within the space of a day, as opposed to going through a whole book. And, you know, I find sometimes people get sidetracked when they get into a book, and all of a sudden, you know, they don't even read the rest of the book because they get sidetracked in the first chapter, and you know, they're off and running. So this way it will be kind of like maybe a piecemeal kind of thing.
Introducing the Katsu Cycle 2.0. Katsu is the ultimate biohack for health, rehabilitation, and recovery. Train bilaterally and untethered from the unit. Tone muscle without weights, lessening the risk of injury to joints and muscles. Improve speed, stamina, and strength. Exercise, recover, and rehabilitate anytime, anywhere. Increase range of motion and promote improved circulation. Accelerate training when time is of the essence. These are just a few of the benefits of the new Katsu Cycle 2.0. Invented in 1966 by Dr. Yoshiaki Sato of Tokyo, Japan, and protected by 47 patents, Katsu Next Generation Equipment and Protocols have a unique and unprecedented safety track record with over 20 million individual Katsu sessions in 48 countries around the globe. Backed by over 50 years of expertise, Katsu Global is excited to introduce the latest advancement in health and wellness, the Katsu Cycle 2.0.
fitting in the palm of your hand or in your pocket, the Katsu Cycle 2.0 is the most advanced, most portable, easiest to use compression device in the world. In combination with a precise algorithm-controlled limb pressure, Katsu's narrow elastic bands yield to muscle contractions, providing safe and effective exercise and rehabilitation for users of all ages and from all walks of life. From Olympic champions to disabled individuals, Katsu users have a full range of motion, providing complete control and the opportunity for a wide variety of movements and training. From elite athletes and soldiers to aging baby boomers and busy executives, Katsu Cycle 2.0 is the next generation training and rehabilitation device used around the world. Katsu is used by the United States Department of Defense, as well as the United States Department of Veterans Affairs.
Katsu, profoundly simple and simply profound.
Statements made in this podcast have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. For more information about Katsu and Katsu products, visit katsuglobal.com. That's KAATSU Global.